Hey, welcome everybody. This is the State of the CIO, where we talk with America's top IT leaders about the changing role of technology in the C-suite. I'm your host, Dan Kelly. Hey everybody, we've got a special guest with us today. His name is Bard Papagai, and he is the Director and Chief Change Facilitator at the Transgrowth International firm. Hi, Bard.
Hi, Dan. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm going to give a quick overview to our guests here for some background information so they know who we're talking to today. So Bard has been with Transgrowth International for almost 19 years. There, he provides executive coaching, training and development, and specializes in emotional intelligence coaching. Throughout his years of experience, he's worked directly with CIOs and other IT leaders in setting and executing successful IT strategies, communication, and leadership. Bard holds a master's in English from the University of Utrecht, and he focuses much of his attention on what makes people tick. And part of that is really understanding and improving the emotional intelligence of the workplace. Did I get that right, Bard? Did I miss anything?
No, I think that's a good place to start from, yeah.
Yeah, okay. His area of focus and core competencies is really operating within the C-suite and in the IT management space. Again, we talked about emotional intelligence, but to get a little bit more specific about that, it's really the human aspect of leadership that deals with running with large and complex organizations, especially global ones, as we opened up the call here, Bard. Is there anything else you want to share about your background before we get into it a bit?
Let me say the following. So I have been fascinated always by the human side of organizations, the human side of how we set up organizations and systems. But the most important thing for me was always from an IT perspective, we are very helpful people, right? IT people always want to change and improve the world. It's in our blood. We can't help ourselves. But the effects are not always well received. The solutions we bring do not always, first of all, people are not always happy with it, but it turns out that change is much harder than just providing a solution. There's much more emotional stuff involved than I expected when I started this journey. And so my whole journey has been about how do you actually produce change in a good way instead of constantly having to fight resistance and sabotage and all that stuff. But also, as I said, what makes people tick, as you read from my description, is how do we become better at working together and producing a better outcome for everybody involved? So that's actually sort of the thread through everything I do is I'm not just looking for results for the business. I'm hoping that those results will be better for everybody. And that's a bit of the idealistic streak there, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we have a lot of CIOs that come on the show, Bard, as you know, right? And part of the talking points really is, what are you most working on in your organization, et cetera? And every single time when we talk about this, it's we're trying to make IT a revenue-enabling organization, right? Versus just an expense line item on the balance sheet, right? That, quite frankly, operates as a black box that the CEO is scared of, right? And, you can turn off a company like the light switch, right? And there's been largely this kind of fear factor behind IT, quite frankly, as IT originated within the enterprise, big companies, right? Now it's all about enabling a digital capability and really making sure that you can not only purchase the software and the hardware and all the infrastructure at the right price, but make sure that you're actually leveraging it to move the needle, if you will, right? Part of that, and I'll get off my soapbox in a second, right? But part of that, in my opinion, and I want to get you, I'm making a statement because I'm trying to gauge a reaction from you, and you can agree with it or not. I feel like part of the problem is the lack of emotional intelligence from IT leaders when they're working with business leaders, right? Not only do they say things different, with different vernacular, et cetera, right? But they, I don't think necessarily historically, IT has really been very business focused, meaning looking at the roadmap, looking at where the business is trying to grow versus just keeping the lights on.
Yeah. I think you're completely right. The way I see it from my own experience, I started actually as a linguist. I studied language and how it changes the way we perceive the world. And then I rolled into IT because we did research into machine translation and artificial intelligence. The first thing I noticed when I started working with IT people is that they speak a different language and they don't even realize it. They think they speak English, but to other people, it's not English at all. It's some mysterious mumbo jumbo. But it also means they actually do live in a separate world. So the first problem I saw was IT people think they live in the same world as the business people they interact with, but there are significant differences. And that gap is fairly wide. That's the first thing. The second thing, you said emotional intelligence. Yeah, IT people don't even think emotions matter, right? That's the whole culture around IT is we are the rational ones. We give me data, give me figures, give me diagrams. And of course, they get really upset when you tell them that they are emotional creatures too, which is always funny. I tell them, you're not rational. And then they get really angry, right? So, yeah, the emotional component is lacking, which makes it very hard for business people to even trust IT people because it seems their reactions are not what you expect from the rest of the workforce, that they react strangely, let's put it that way. But there's a third element, which is also to do with what I call social intelligence, and that is the way IT has always been trying to help the business is by taking the business problem and coming up with a solution for it. But that means that they make everybody's problems theirs, right? So what starts as a business problem becomes an IT problem.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and once it's an IT problem, and that's the subtle psychology of it, once it's an IT problem, the business doesn't have to care about it anymore. It's now somebody else's problem, right?
That's right.
Then you get this weird thing that the business is expecting IT to solve a problem that is actually a business problem. It's now become an IT problem. And IT, no matter how well they deliver and how hard they try, will never get it completely right and then get blamed for it because it's not what the business expected. So for me, part of this, how to solve this gap is to make IT people realize that, first of all, it's a business problem. Anything you do, everything you touch is a business problem. It should never become an IT problem. If there are IT problems, keep it away from the business. That's your stuff, right? Don't talk to the business about it. That's your business. But everything else is a business problem. And the second thing is take the business with you all the way through the journey, right? Don't tell them you're going to solve it and then disappear for 9 months. Stay with them. Make it something that you do together. Solve it as in a partnership. And that's the social intelligence bit. You need to become part of the business community, not separate from it. Now I get off my soapbox.
I can feel the CEOs in the audience shaking their head. Yes, make sure they understand it's a business problem. Because immediately what I was thinking of is every CEO I talk to is like, gosh, I can't believe how much IT costs.
Yeah.
And how do I rationalize an investment in a specific, capability, which is a nice way of saying IT tool, right? How's it going to actually move my business forward, right? So thinking about it as a business problem, that's great. The other takeaway I just took from your spiel there was the importance of co-creation, taking people along for the journey, because I totally agree with you, Bart. I think a lot of business people actually have a deep interest, and this specifically on the perhaps the executive leadership in the sales organizations, especially, they have a deep interest of what's going on in IT, but they just don't speak it. They feel uncomfortable about it. They don't get it. I want to go talk to somebody and I want to go sell something. But they're actually, everybody has an interest in learning, right? Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. So one of the things that I did with CIOs was help them see that business people are interested in IT, but you do have to translate it a bit, right? You have to make it understandable to the lay person. So that's a language matter. So learn to speak their language and invite them in. I had one customer who actually had a customer sort of lounge space where people from the business could visit. And let's say it was a sort of a safe environment where you could come in and talk to IT people in a comfortable way. And they could show them things that they were working on. there's a danger. There's another element that sometimes comes in. IT people have to stop thinking of business people as their customers, I think. Because it's better than not thinking about them at all, I agree. But they are not your customers. They're your colleagues. You work for the same business. My ideal situation is where an IT person feels just as much part of the business as any other business person out there. If you see them as customers, you have created distance.
Very insightful, Bart. Let me ask you a question on that. If you were to enter into a corporation where you saw, let's call it the more typical approach, which is what you just described, right, of IT seeing them as customers, et cetera, you know, how would you go forward and change that? Let's say if our audience is primarily CIOs here, right? If I was a CIO and I hear you, I know the problem, but how would I fix it? What steps would you take? Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If I work with CIOs, I would start, first of all, with checking their personal state of mind. And that talks to the emotional intelligence and the social intelligence as a leader. And there's a few things to check. First of all, what is their position in the organization? There's the formal side. So who do they report to? And there's the informal side. Who do they interact with? On the personal side, for the CIO, it's really important that they become aware of their position and the weaknesses and strengths they have there, but also that they have a good think about what they actually want to achieve, right? The question that I usually ask first is, who do you want to be in 5 years from now? And especially when people are talking about you when you're not there, what do you want them to say about you? And that starts the conversation. And then I work with them first on, okay, find out who your allies are, who your enemies are, who is neutral around you, and try to forge some alliances with new people on the business side, and see if you can, first of all, have conversations with them that are purely about their business. Go out there and talk to them about what makes you lie awake at night. What single problem, if it were solved, would really, really, really make you happy? Or even stronger, if you dare, what makes you successful? That's a very interesting question to ask people. So how did you get where you are, and what's your next success?
Allow them to use their language.
Yeah. Now, there's a little trick that I learned from Edgar Schein, who's a sort of a guru on corporate culture. He says that there's essentially three languages or three language groups within an organization you need to learn to speak. Now, there's the engineering language we know, and that is you see something, you want to make it better. It's always about improvement, streamlining, gluing things together. That's engineering, tinkering. Then there, yeah, look, we want to
tinkering. Yeah.
have you ever seen, you know, an IT person coming into a room will look at the place of the sockets, how the wires are put together?
Every time in the largest of companies, you know, I'm not going to name who I work with here for confidentiality, but the largest of companies on the Dow side, I've heard the CIO even walking in there trying to fix the cables.
Yeah, exactly. I still do it, right? I come somewhere to present and the equipment doesn't work straight away. I jump in and tell them how to fix it. Okay, so that's us. That's engineering. But there's more there's other engineers in an organization as well. Anyway, those are the fixers. Then you have the operational side. That's the people that are just doing the work. So the operational people. And their language is very much about doing things together. They are socially focused. Who has the most status, respect, influence. So they're constantly looking at each other. Are you happy? Can I join you? Are you against me? Are you for me? That's very much focused on how we work together. And then there's the executives or the managerial level. And their language is all about winning. They want to score. They want to come out on top. They want to beat the competition. And one of the hardest things to get CIOs to understand is that business people don't care about improvement. They care about winning.
Expand upon that topic.
Improvement only matters when it ends up in a result that for the business side becomes a win, right? It has to end up in a winning, beating the competition. Something that they can then brag about and say, look at how great we are.
Right.
A lot of IT improvements do not immediately translate to a win for the business. Now, we may think they do, but then it's our job to show the business how that actually works. What's our contribution to their win? Now, IT people don't like winning. It's really stupid, but most IT people, when I force them to talk about what's the win here, they get uncomfortable.
All right. That's a fascinating insight. I've never thought about, honestly. But to your point, essentially, merging the two languages together.
Now, and there's the third one. Don't forget the third one. The operational side is very much about the social fabric of the organization. And then IT people come in with a typical engineering focus and they say, oh, you know, yeah, you're doing okay, but let's shuffle that around a bit and pull you apart and change your process. What you're doing is you're disrupting their social structure. And then you expect them to embrace you and say, thank you very much. They see you as an enemy of the very social fabric that they've created. So be very careful there.
Yeah, that makes sense. So how would you suggest leading institutions, whether it be, and I always say this, you know, I don't care if you're a Fortune 100 client or a startup, you know, how would you suggest someone go about instituting a culture that proactively addresses this, what is inevitably miscommunication between two personality types? How would you suggest they approach that?
Well, that's an interesting question I've been researching for the last 30 years or so. I have a few ideas, let's put it this way, and some of them actually work. I recently came across actually an old friend of mine, and he put it into a single sentence, which is, we is more important than why. It's a bit of a pushback against the not unimportant focus on the why of things. It's a little bit about creating first a sense of we are in this together. We are a group. We are a community. And it's important to show people that everybody in this community has a role to play, that we are together for a reason. We first of all need to get that sense of this is us.
It actually creates a safe environment as well, Bart, right?
Yeah. And so if you put we before why, the first thing you look at is, so why are... it's not why are we together, but how are we together? How are we going to behave? What do we accept? What don't we accept? But most of all, what are we going to brag about? What is it that will make us proud a few years from now when we look back and say, yeah, we did that? I have a 4P model, which is participation first. So invite people, show them that they're valuable, that you welcome them, and show them then how they can contribute. Then you get the purpose. That's when the why comes in. So, okay, now that we're all nicely together, so what is it that we're going to achieve? And then you get the pride is how are we going to make sure that we can be proud of what we do? And the fourth P is then the potential, and that is how do we grow that then? How do we see that scale up, get bigger, get more? And underneath it all, I have always said the one thing that goes wrong in most organizations, from startups to big companies, is that we focus so much on outcomes that we forget the little steps in between. And that disconnects people from the outcome. So when I'm working really hard and I'm making progress, but I'm still months or years away from the result, I get discouraged, I get disheartened, and I don't actually feel that I'm contributing anything. So keep people in the loop with, we are making progress, we have improved, we have done part of the way, and this was your contribution to it.
This is such an important element of everything we do. I mean, just running a business in general, even running a family, you could argue, yeah?
Oh, especially in a family. Have you ever told a two-year-old that they couldn't help with setting the table? They get really upset, right? I tell you this, and I'm a little bit over-enthusiastic sometimes about this, because this is one of the insights that I think goes deepest to one of the problems we have in organizations, and even in IT, when it comes to engaging employees. We have grown up in an environment that believes that people only work when you give them a reward for it. An external reward, right? It's an extrinsic motivator, like money or status or whatever. No, most people want to do something useful. They want to contribute, right? And so most people would work even if you didn't pay them, if they felt that it was important, that it was valued. That's our social motivator. So why are we constantly trying to push people to work when if you take off the pressure a little bit and show them how valuable they are, they would work twice as hard without the push?
Boy, that's a wonderful insight. I hope that statement is heard by the masses, especially in large corporate culture, right? That, quite frankly, drove me out of big corporate culture on a personal basis.
Me too. And here's the thing, the organizations that I have worked with or talked to that got even half of this right have so much better outcomes, but also a much better retention of staff. Staff is happier. They don't get sick as often. But even more importantly, they become much more creative and proactive because they feel safe enough, right, to go out there and try things.
Wonderful, Bart. I tell you that this you've allowed our audience to take so many snippets of information out of here and actionable intelligence. This one's going to be listened to quite a bit. Would you mind repeating your four P's for me just so I can get them right?
So it's participation, purpose, pride, and potential.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I call it 4P people. 4 people.
4 people. Yeah. 4 people. That's great. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. I want to print that out and put it on my wall right now here in my office.
All right.
That's really wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Bart, for your time today. I know everyone's going to get a lot of insight and take some actions from this. Is there anything else you want to share with the team?
That would take another half hour.
Yeah. Take as much time as you need.
The way I have been trying to bring this together, I call it organizational culture and how culture and change work together. I feel that one of the key responsibilities of CIOs in the future is to be co-responsible for the culture of the organization. We cannot pretend that that is not our business, right? So whenever you work on systems and processes that affect people's environment, you have to also take responsibility for how is that going to affect the way we work together, the way we see ourselves as a community. I also teach CIOs and other executives, this is not just CIOs, but CIOs need to be included, that culture is your responsibility.
Right.
You cannot even hand it off to some HR person or to some, right? This is you. You're a leader. Culture is your thing.
Exactly. Own it, right?
Yeah. Own it. Work with it. And be aware of the effect you have as a leader, right? Anything, it's not so much what you say, but it's anything you do is seen as a role model for how we behave. So especially values. This is an example that I use a lot. Every business has values, right? And these are our values. And then
Right. The corporate values. On the website.
Exactly. And they pick the best words out they can find in the dictionary.
Absolutely. Supported by the biggest consulting firms.
And then you ask anybody in the organization to explain what the values are. Well, first of all, half of them wouldn't even know the values. They had, you know, they vaguely heard of it. But even the ones that know the values don't agree on what it means. And why is that? Because their leadership usually doesn't give any consistent role model for what those values actually mean in practice.
Yeah, because they're not living it. Yep.
Because they had not thought about it, right? And if you adopt a value, then I sometimes say, and this is hard to hear for business people, a value is only a value when it limits your ability to make a profit.
Hmm. Oh, boy, that's something to chew on for a while.
And why is that? Because that's the true test of whether it's a value or just a nice phrase that you like to put on the wall because it makes you feel, it gives a warm and fuzzy feeling. When the rubber hits the road, when you have a choice between going left against your value because there's some money in there or going right because that's what you said your value was, but you lose the bid, you lose the project, or God knows, you may even, you know, really damage the business revenue, that shows that it's a true value.
Right.
Now, that takes courage.
My team and I talk about this all the time. We don't use the word value, but I should. So I'm going to take that away from this conversation, quite frankly, Bart. We use the word integrity, which is a little bit more of a general term, right? But we have to make those decisions every single day as well, right? And there's definitely been a couple checkpoints along the way here where, you know, we could have made a heck of a lot more money if we wanted to calculate a savings or an avoidance one way versus another, right? But we always hold to our, now I'll call it value statements, right? But our integrity of saying, you know, how would the client feel about it, right? How would the avoidance of doubt play in here, right? To our overall reputation. I learned something here in this last just couple minutes as you talk about that. I'm going to put that as the tagline, I think, for this podcast. You know, a value is something unless you're basically willing to walk away for money from it. Or you know.
Correct. Yeah. It's only a value when it limits your choices.
Limits your choices. Yeah.
Even when it would damage your bottom line. That's the one thing that frustrated me endlessly in most organizations is that they have these values and they think having these values changes anything. No, it doesn't, unless you as leadership consistently lives by those values. Now, and if you don't have them. Admit we don't have any other value than the bottom line. That's fine. Then at least you're honest, right?
Yeah, exactly. If you don't have them, you don't have them. And that's, you know, but the best talent will attract themselves to those people that are really holding themselves to value. I mean, I fully believe that. And I think that's what you're saying, right, Bart?
Well, if you talk about participation, right, the first P of the social dynamics, people are attracted to like-minded people. And your core values are definitely part of that. So if you have a beautiful story, that will attract certain people. If you then don't live up to that story, you do more than just disappoint them. You turn them against you. And I have worked with quite a few organizations where the internal battles are almost scary, right? Where people have taken positions against each other inside the company and are fighting. And I think, obviously, you haven't understood the real values that are at play here. You haven't understood what really matters to people.
That's what essentially breeds corporate politics, internal infighting, et cetera. Is that what you're saying, Bart?
It's definitely a part of it. It's ignoring that people are driven by those values much more than we think, right? And that people are emotional about it. Of course, the sad thing is most people also are not very much aware of the values that drive them. If you want to work with the teams, then one of the things that I do with teams is make them aware of the things they actually value.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
Bring in an outside consultant just to tell them what they value. Isn't that interesting?
It sometimes surprises me, and this is not a judgment. This is just, it's part of also our education, right? We don't pay much attention to this in our education. It's all externalized. It's all about what you do. I have a very good friend who says, isn't it strange that we're constantly talking about what to do and how to improve what you do as if we are human doings, but we're actually human beings. So why don't we start with who you are before you talk about what you do?
Another great catchphrase right there, right? I hope that's in your website or wherever you have it. I don't...
I'm writing books now. I hope to put them all in books. Yeah.
Put that in a book because yeah, I'm going to highlight that statement. Yeah.
So that was the last thing that I feel that I really needed to say is that CIOs, please be leaders, right? And take ownership of the culture, not just of your own team, but you're part of the culture of the entire organization. So that is your responsibility too.
Wonderful. There you have it, everybody. We just heard from Bart Papagai from Transgrowth International. Thank you so much, Bart, for your time.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share this, get it out of me.
Absolutely, Bart. Thanks so much.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. If you got value from today's conversation, please share this podcast with one person you think who would enjoy it. For show notes, episodes, and more, please visit thenegotiator.guru. Look forward to hearing from everyone soon. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.